Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And I must say that music introduction was really something. I'm the child of two musicians and I'm a librarian because I have no talent. So thank you for that. Oh, and it's because I'm not able to be there in person, the power of technology allows me to be with you. And it's my privilege to spend some time with you from Baltimore. And I also want to acknowledge the recent passing of another Baltimorean and member of the Federation, Mr. Charles Cook, who was so instrumental in designing technological solutions. And we are thinking of his family during this time. It's also an honor to speak with you from the perspective of the Library of the Congress now, because it gives me an opportunity to share with you the hard work of librarians and the devotion of many people across this country providing access so that, quote, all may read, the motto of the library's National Library for the Blind and Physical and Print Disabled. That name was changed recently. And you may know that the division was officially established by an act of Congress in 1931. However, the library's access and commitment to providing materials to support adults and children who are blind became a significant part of the library's mission when it moved into its first home, the magnificent Thomas Jefferson Building, designed to resemble an Italian palace, to signify that in this country we build palaces to knowledge and wisdom and not to royalty. And one of my predecessors, it was mentioned that I'm the 14th Librarian Young, personally in 1897, opened a special reading room with mahogany tables, and the finest furnishings where books with raised print were available and readings were held. And one of the first public programs featured the renowned poet Paul Laurence Dunbar, who was at the time a Library of Congress staff member, and he read from his works. And material over the years was acquired by gift and purchase, and really supplemented in 1913 when Congress passed a law that said that one copy of every raised type book produced in the United States be deposited at the Library of Congress. And then, and you'll appreciate this, after years of urging, in 1931, the Pratt-Smoke Act passed by Congress and was approved by the president to appropriate annual funds for a national free library program that allowed the Library of Congress to not only distribute reading materials, but to produce them for regional libraries for circulation free of charge. And in 1952, a year I know well, the service was expanded to children and teens, and in 1962 to include music materials, and in 1966 to include free service to individuals with other disabilities. And beginning with 19 libraries, the network has expanded to 55 regional libraries, 26 sub-regional libraries, and 16 advisory and outreach centers in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Guam. However, this network of libraries, and from my perspective at the Library of Congress now, really shows me that this network of libraries is providing one of the bedrock services to equal access of materials that inform, inspire, and engage. Frederick Douglass once said, "Once you learn to read, you'll be forever free." And in Alberto Manguel's History of Reading, he said, "As dictators, slave owners, and other illicit holders of power have always known, an illiterate crowd is the easiest to rule. And if you cannot prevent people from learning to read and being able to read, the next best recourse is to limit its scope." And libraries were established to support literacy, and to be a key to opportunity. And the library world in general has had a commitment to ensuring equal access for all. And that access means everyone should have the opportunity to be empowered by libraries. They are the places that hold the materials to inspire and cultivate the possibilities of humans. There's a book, I Am a Librarian, that I've been referring to a lot in the past couple of years. It is Eric Kleinenberg's Palaces for the People. And he said in a recent article, to restore civil society, start with the library. And he's echoing what librarians and library patrons have been saying for years, that libraries are equalizers and are absolutely universal. And I've been able to see this commitment to equal access to materials from the very start when I began my own library career in an urban library system, the Chicago Public Library, that administered an NLS regional library. And years later, I was able to be firsthand with a network of NLS at the Enid Pratt Free Library in Baltimore that was physically and programmatically connected to the Maryland NLS. I even got a chance to conduct story times. And libraries have always evolved to adapt to the needs of communities. And the Library of Congress's partnerships and networks help ensure that those opportunities are accessible to everyone. In 2013, the Library of Congress announced the availability of the Braille Audible Recording Download, BARD, which permits our patrons to download Braille and talking books to their mobile devices without cost. And in 2016, to provide refreshable Braille devices. Equal access from this standpoint means continuing to enhance and upgrade that system as the world continues on a digital path. And that path has been most strikingly emphasized in the recent months. Equal access means making sure that the NLS provides everyone the opportunity to get accurate, objective information for all of their needs. Equal access means that the NLS and the network provide materials in Braille for children that allows a young person to be inspired by the biographies of people like Rosa Parks. And equal access means being engaged by a concert by a young jazz pianist, Jose Andre, who is also blind and is now performing online after being live streamed. A recent op-ed piece published by Forbes magazine this past summer had an interesting headline. Amazon should replace libraries to save taxpayers' money. Now, as you might imagine, this piece was greeted by outrage, not only by librarians, but library users from every sector worldwide. In fact, the uproar was so loud, Forbes deleted and took down the article. And I might add, rightfully so. And now as Librarian of Congress, I've been part of the amazing and brilliant work of libraries across the world. Whether it's at a sprawling urban library system or a small rural library, all joined together in the recognition of the critical need for access to resources, services, and technologies by all people. And libraries have learned to adapt to the changing needs of diverse communities, and they're continuing to try to harness the power of technology to provide materials in all formats to inform, inspire, and engage. The Library of Congress recently launched a new strategic plan to be even more user-centered. And part of this plan is a digital strategy that will harness technology to bridge not only geographical divides, but every divide that prevents us from expanding our reach and enhancing our services. This means we will continue to throw open what's been called the Library of Congress's treasure chest, the world's largest library. And it will allow us to connect with all users and cultivate an innovation culture. And it's starting now. For instance, NLS has launched a blog, Music Notes, that highlights lesser known materials and activities and people in the music department. And some of the items featured in the blogs have been profiled on Braille transcribers and their work, free Braille giveaways, as well as interviews with patrons and narrators, all social media. And so, as I close, I just want to assure you that the Library of Congress will continue to join libraries nationwide to provide equal access and to be more aggressive in our outreach to work with libraries and communities across the nation. Whether it's working with local librarians to working with teachers and librarians in schools, we want to share the resources of the largest library in the world. And I think I can just say I had one of the largest, but I'll just say it. It is the largest in the world with everyone. One of the primary reasons for instituting a national program like NLS was to decrease the difficulty and the high cost for individual libraries to acquire materials in special formats. And we will continue to offer books and other materials in as many ways as possible, free to all, regardless of age, economic circumstances, or increasingly technological expertise. That is what equal access to inform, inspire, and engage means from the perspective of the Library of Congress. And it is an honor for me to be librarian at this time. I really want to thank you for including the Library of Congress and with me, the library community in your conference. You should know that we're your partners marching together in equal access. Thank you for including me.